Yes, fantastic to have your company on another busy morning here on the Big Sports Brekkie. Laurie Daly and Michael Clark alongside me, as you heard. Guys, fantastic night of sport. As always, always some talking points when it comes to a Monday and a Monday night off the back of a big footy weekend. From a rugby league side of things, interesting news out of Penrith with co-captain Nathan Cleary expected to miss up to a month of footy. Not so good the news for the Parramatta Eels either, with Mitch Moses set to miss up to 3 months with a fractured foot. All eyes on him and his recovery. There was comment from Graham Annesley in regards to the Taylor May situation and Reece Walsh's facial fracture. We'll touch on that in two ticks. South, the discussion points continue in the AFL. Well, we talked yesterday at length about 2 metre Peter's upcoming tribunal visit, and that is certainly going to be a talking point throughout the course of this morning as well. And AFLW, we actually have a Swans player coming on, not from AFLW, but we do need to potentially ask him about the two Sydney Swans AFLW players that were charged by police with possession of an illicit drug late last year. That story across most of the morning papers, which we'll go through a little bit later on. How are you, Loz?
Good, thanks, Benny. Some big news coming out of both Parramatta and Penrith yesterday with the announcement of both halfbacks suffering injuries. But I think the main concern will be with Mitch Moses being out likely 8 weeks. I know that they're saying that Nathan Cleary might be out for up to a month, but they've got two games and then a bye. So you think he might only miss 2 games of football, whereas Mitch Moses, he could miss up to 10 games. And the type of form that he displayed on the weekend was first class. And they will miss him going forward. And starting with this Monday's game when they take on the West Tigers. The Tigers themselves had their first win of the season and would have taken a lot of confidence out of that. So it's going to be whoever replaces both these guys got big job boots to fill. It's likely that Brad Snyder will come in and replace Cleary at the Panthers, but we're unsure of what they'll do at Parramatta. But to miss Mitch Moses for that amount of time will certainly hurt Parramatta's chances.
I did watch a lot of footy across the weekend, but was it expected that these guys would be spending so long out? Nathan
walked off at the end of the game.
Relatively innocuous.
Yeah, and there was no indication after the game that he would be missing for up to a month. Now, he walked off, so not really limping. So I think that he'll miss those 2 games, then plus the bye. Even if it's 3 games he's missing, that's not a big part of the year, and I think Penrith will be able to cope. Mitch Moses, though, that's a different story for Parramatta when you're talking long term, up to 10 weeks out with a fractured foot. And he's their key playmaker. I know Cleary is for Penrith, but I think they'll be able to be relatively safe bringing Snyder in, because I think Snyder's actually a good player, and every time he played with the Raiders when he filled in was fantastic. So I think they've got a player there that can do a job, next man up mentality, and Penrith will come out of it okay. But yeah, Parramatta, that's a tough one for them, losing Mitch Moses, because I think they're playing good, tough football at the moment. The brand of footy, offloading, stretches opposition defence. But Mitch Moses' kicking game is so important to them. And that's where they'll miss him.
Morning, Michael.
Morning, boys.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Happy Tuesday. I think Mitch's is real bad, because even if it's a fracture, they'll have to put him in a boot, because if it doesn't heal, that can get out of control bad. That's off your leg for 12 months. It starts as a stress fracture and just gets worse and worse. So he has no choice with a break. He needs that break to heal. It seems to me like Cleary's probably tweaked the same hamstring he did last year, Loz, and that's why if he's walking like that, it's really 10 days. If it's a genuine grade one tear,
you're really back.
Yeah. But I reckon they're saying, you know what, we're planning for 4 weeks because he's tweaked the same hammy as he did last year, and we're just not going to take any risk with him. I'm surprised.
Yeah. But also with the
and they got the bye as well.
Why would you risk him?
Why all three half, like the best three halfbacks in the competition, all out injured?
Yeah, and all different injuries. Yeah. Reynolds' knee,
interesting, isn't it?
Medial ligament.
Start of the year, is that?
Yeah. Well, a lot of front rowers injured too. A lot of forwards.
Yeah.
you know, I mentioned on the Matty John show the other night, you know, like Jai Arrow, shoulder, needs an operation at some point, so he's going to try and manage the shoulder to get through the season.
Yeah
Tom Gilbert, go down, round one. Tino, Fasua Mawali, he's out for the season. There are a couple of big losses too for Queensland.
Yeah.
Especially Jai Arrow, Tom Gilbert and Tino.
It just makes me think about our conversation about a month ago when we started talking about Origin, and then the three of us, you, Middo and I, sat here and all of us just went at the same, you know what, let's not even waste our breath because there's definitely going to be injuries.
You just don't know.
And if you look at, right, like I say, for New South Wales right now, our best three halfbacks are injured.
Yeah. But, I think the two of them, Cleary will be right. But you don't know. You're right. 100%.
Like, imagine if Origin was on, you had to select Origin this week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair point too.
And that's just the sport, isn't it? You just, your wishful thinking is you got all players available.
Mate, you just got to be
prepared.
Well,
as you mentioned, Queensland, that's a massive hit, losing Tino.
Tino is.
Yeah.
He's a guy that played big minutes. He took on Payne Haas and took on all the comers for New South Wales, the big boys, and confronted them head on. So without him, they lose a lot in their forward pack.
We'll get plenty of texts throughout the course of the morning, I'm sure. And that SMS number is 0419 767 272 and 1353 53 for those who are keen to call. We've got all of our usual segments, including a new and innovative concept called Pressing Matters, which I'm looking forward to not too long at all. About 10 past 6, we'll launch into that. Then we'll take your calls. Adam Pengilly's going to be on the show. Damien Cook, the Bunnies hooker, will also be joining us. I did see a question from Curly in regards to Cookie, which maybe we could touch on now if you want, Loz. Early days, Uppy Carousel at South's lack of form. Could it make it hard for Cookie selection in Origin?
Oh, most definitely it would. Yeah, I think Madge has made it quite clear that he wants players in form, coming from form teams. And if you look at, you know, what Queensland have been able to do the last couple of years, the Queensland sides have been performing well, the majority of the Queensland sides. So Billy's been able to pick players in form and have the confidence that they will deliver on the State of Origin arena. And sometimes it's always difficult to pick players when they're not playing well in clubs that are losing. So I think Madge has put everyone on notice that he wants players in form. So not a great start for South Sydney, and obviously not a great start for Cookie. But look, they got too much talent in that team to not fire a shot at some stage. And I think most of us are expecting it to happen on Thursday.
He cannot start on the bench again.
No, he can't.
That was a mistake. Yeah. If it was about having impact in regards to making everyone feel like, you know, you pull your socks up, or I don't care who you are, I'm going to bench you or drop you, I understand
Well, the changes didn't work. The changes didn't
work. No way.
The halfback change didn't work.
No. And they've got to have the courage to own that as well, though.
Yeah. But he wasn't too bad, Dean Hawkins.
Yeah.
But it just...
He wasn't better.
No, that's exactly right. You know, but I think, as we kept talking about yesterday, it's just the effort areas of the game that need working on for South Sydney. And you know what? They've got to stick together. I know it's easy to say that, but if there's any fractures in that group, we'll find out on Friday, because this is a game I think they can win. And the Bulldogs are playing good footy, but if they go 0-4 to start with, then they've got the Warriors and the Sharks. If they can't beat the Bulldogs, then they're going to struggle the next 2 weeks, and then who knows what may happen leading into the bye.
I think their players handled the media very well yesterday. They've come out and said they're a tight-knit group. They've come out and supported their coach, and I know that's what you have to do, but sometimes you can see a little gap in communication between players when it comes to a team sport, and I think yesterday they handled it really well.
Yeah.
Now it's not what you say, it's what you do. Yeah. Now they've got to get a result.
Yeah, they've got to get a result. They've got to get it through effort, and they've got to get it through the way they defend.
Yeah.
Because if they defend well, they've got ability with the ball. There's no doubt about that. But first things come first. You've got to do the tough part of the game, and you've got to enjoy doing that, and you've got to have a sustained effort at doing that for 80 minutes. And when you go through a bad period in a game, don't leak as many points as what they have been.
James Jordan, the Sydney Swans midfielder, is going to be joining us a little later on the show as well, around 20 to 8. We'll get to speak to him. And I can't wait to pick his brain on what's been the key. Now, the Swans have looked absolutely fantastic thus far. They do have a couple of off-field things, I guess, from an AFLW standpoint. I've already mentioned that. And I am intrigued to get an update on Harry Cunningham as well, who was concussed on the weekend, and maybe even James's thoughts. I'm sure he'll be a little limited in what he can say with 2 metre Peter heading to the tribunal. But with that in mind, we'll still put it to him. Brad Davidson is going to join us as well. Lots to talk about on a racing front, and hopefully he'll have a tip for us. Danny Widler is on the show as well, and Jared Daffy to run through all of the markets that we have with tab.com.au. A few texts already coming through. One suggesting that if you were to be picking a New South Wales team right now, you'd have Brooksy in.
Oh, dear.
Wow. Two games.
I'm just trying to think of what the other combinations would be, what other halfbacks are available. You put me on the spot there, Benny.
Oh, sorry. That's in saying the three, New South Wales players are out. Yeah, okay. Well,
I'd have to look at the teams. I'd have to have a team sheet in front of me.
Who are we missing?
There's obviously someone that we're missing. But, look, Brooksy has played some really good football. Some really good football since he's moved over to Manly. And I think that's off the back of not having the responsibility to guide and direct the team around. His running game is superb. He's got other players that draw attention away from him. You've got Cherry Evans. You've got Tom, you've got Ola Kawatu out there on the edge, and their forwards are doing a great job, Manly. And the way they played and started the game last weekend, where they moved the ball, it was a high-paced game, skillful game that Manly played, and they were outstanding.
You're in the gun. Anonymous.
Oh, you can only, before you read that, you can only imagine who sent that message. Please do not waste your breath on him.
What is it?
We let him go to the keeper every day. Don't open the door today. That stupid message at the top there. You know who that's going to be.
Yeah, well, I had other commitments.
He's the text message Narc. Yeah. That's what he is.
How come I wasn't at the at Laurie Daly Cup and Andrew Johns Cup final? Well, that's easy, Ben, to answer. I had other commitments.
Yeah. Mate.
So that's quite easy.
Because you give sometimes, your name to something as well, it doesn't you mean have, you need to be there all the time.
Sometimes you have things on that you can't get out of.
Hey, speaking of which, yesterday was a big day in your house.
Yes, it was. My wife's birthday.
Take her out? Did you go for dinner?
No, we didn't.
Did you cook a dinner?
No.
Did you do her ironing?
No.
You buy no present?
No present. No, I don't.
No birthday present?
I did that for our anniversary, but I didn't do it for the present.
I'm opposite to Loz when it comes to that. I'm a big celebrator.
Your love language is gifts?
No, I love giving. Yep. I love celebrating milestone. Birthday, Christmas, if it was anniversary, that stuff, I'm a big fan of it. I like making the most of those days. But in saying that, I was never married for how long?
Oh, 25?
I was never married for 25. Yeah.
50 times my record.
Yeah. I think I would imagine if you listen, you know, to anybody that's married for 25 years, they say, you spend all that time together, that some things do change.
I'll tell Maddie the key to a long and loving marriage is no presents. I'll let her know that.
It might have been different when he was dating as well. I think married for 25, the rules might change a fraction.
Getting back to the halfback position, Nicho Hynes. Yeah, a couple of people.
Of course.
A couple of people have texted him.
Yeah.
Would be next cab off the rank.
So, Brooksy, your first reserve for now. Welcome back to the Big Sports Brekkie. Time to run through the back page headlines across the country's major papers. And it's fair to say on the telly, the injuries to a couple of key players in the NRL that we've already touched on are certainly prime and paramount there. But the news that two Swans AFL players have been charged over possession of an illicit substance is certainly one that has made headlines across the country, but particularly in Sydney. So this is a little different to the situation in the men's competition, where we've seen a player suspended, the difference being that this was out of competition. So if you are caught by police out of competition at a pub or club or something of that nature, you're not beholden to the same rules as if you were caught with, say, a positive drug test on game day.
Correct.
So for anyone who's comparing the two, that is the difference between them. Now, you could argue they should get the same penalty. That's not for me to say. Mm. But they are the rules. So if one's in-competition testing. You can cop a suspension, which, as it turns out, can be quite severe. And then if it's out of competition, you do have to pay the penalty from the police and the courts.
But it's no difference to... There's a different penalty between performance-enhancing drug and social drug. There's a different penalty.
True.
Even in competition, if you're caught with, let's say, cocaine...
It is the same drug in this instance.
Yes, but, I understand but that. Yes. But what I'm saying in general, just for the understanding about the difference in the policy, out of competition, in competition, there is a difference. But then the drug, particularly in competition, being caught with performance enhancing is automatic 4-year suspension, unless that's changed. But then a social drug is a different penalty.
Well, and it's not just applicable to sports people either. Say, for example, mining, where you regularly get alcohol and drug tested upon arrival. If you were to test positive there, I think there's every chance that you may lose your job or face a suspension from work for a couple of months, years, whatever it may be, right? Whereas if you were done at the pub or club, it may be that work's completely unaware.
Yeah, okay.
You'll get a fine or you'll end up in court. Mm. I think they'll probably find out if you end up in jail. But they are different in that instance. But one aspect that I do find interesting, Laurie, is AFLW, while growing and building each and every year, and we're starting to get to know heaps of the players, we have them on the show pretty regularly, there is one perk to a little aspect of anonymity, and that is that neither of them have been named. If this was a men's Swans player who was caught with drugs by police and
that'd
went
be a massive
to court,
story, yeah.
It would be a massive story.
Yeah, yeah, and I understand that. But the drug laws in AFL are different to a lot of other codes in Australia. Is that right? Can't you self-report?
You can self-report
and ring, and then it's no strike, and you get three strikes.
I don't think it's no strike. I think there's cricket's the same.
Is it?
So let's say I go out
and have a night out, and then wake up the next morning.
Someone spikes my drink, for example.
Yep.
I wake up in the morning and I think someone spikes my drink.
I ring
the doctor straight away. Now, I don't know what happens after that. I would assume there's a process around. You might need to go and get tested. Because especially if you've got a game the following day or 2 days later, whatever it is, you might need to go and get tested to check if you do have a substance in your system.
Yep.
Now, I don't know. I can't imagine you can do that three times or five times.
I thought there was something with the AFL. Now, I don't know whether they changed it, but I'm sure there was a story around the AFL. You would ring and self-report, and that was okay.
No, the criticism in the story at the time was in regards to mental health. So you can be put onto the mental health registrar, and if that is the case and you've self-reported, that is exempt from a strike. There was a claim that was being manipulated.
Yes, it was something around self-reporting to allow you then not to be tested, or if you were tested and you self-reported, then you didn't get a strike. I think they changed that rule, though, didn't they?
No.
It still exists.
Oh, the other thing as well, in cricket, and I'd imagine in all sport, there's a certain... I think it's definitely your first cross, and it could be your first two crosses. It stays private between team doctor and yourself. It doesn't go to... It might necessarily go to Cricket Australia, for example, and it certainly doesn't get released to the public, the players, the media. So I think it's on your third occasion, that's when it becomes public.
And a lot of clubs don't like that because they've been caught in the past where they've signed a player that's had one or maybe two strikes.
And they don't know about it.
They don't know about it. They come to your club. They get another strike, and then all of a sudden they're out for 12 weeks.
Fair enough.
And the clubs are going, hey, we didn't know anything about this.
Mm. See, I'm just looking today. I'm just looking now on our screens at Today Show, and same story we're talking about now. They've got, I don't know who the lady is. So they haven't been named. They obviously know exactly who it is. They've got someone's face attached to it. So they must be named.
The names are out there, but some outlets aren't naming them. And
to
others
protect
are.
Them.
And I can only assume that is down to who determines what is in public interest. If They don't think it's of public interest to name them. They won't.
But how? Okay, I haven't read the actual story. Can you? I see the headline: two Sydney Swans women players caught with cocaine. So caught by who? Police?
Police. And so, they went to court.
So then how?
So they're named in court.
So how can it not be named? If I'm done for possession.
Yeah.
If I'm done for possession,
it's all over.
It's front page news before I even go to court.
Well, don't do that.
What I'm saying is, though, how can you not name them?
Well, that comes down to various media outlets will determine. They will essentially play adjudicator there.
That's not selective journalism at all.
I'm not saying it's right, but that is how it will play out.
But their names.
No, they should be able
what
to
I'm
be
saying,
named.
But hang on, this is not legally they can't be named. You're saying they're just choosing not to.
Yes.
Yeah, but then, mate, it's now or once it touches a media outlet, like it has, they are going to be named.
But their argument would be if they're not household names. Now, I don't agree with it, for what it's worth. I'm just making the point. If they're not household names, the point will be, what's the point in naming them? If it doesn't add to the story.
Well, they name everyone else.
Yeah, but I think if it as soon as you are known, if you got done for possession, right?
Yeah.
It would still come out in the media that was you. Mm. You haven't played 100 NRL games for the West Tigers.
But if it was one of my mates,
of course,
who was anonymous to a lot of people, if he got caught, he'd be named.
I agree with that. I think especially as soon as you're in the media in any way, if you're a professional athlete, but I think, of course, they're going to be named, though.
Do you know one of them?
No.
I don't,
I'm not covering for anyone.
No, but I'm confused what the conversation is. Like, I'm saying the fact that it's taken so long to come out, and it's not a front page article, shows the difference between sports. Because if this is an NRL player, it's front page news.
Yeah. Completely agree.
So, but at the end of the day, it's going. If a female athlete, a female AFL athlete, a female cricket athlete, a female swimmer, if they get caught with this, it's going to come out. That's a no. It's no brainer.
Quite excited to make a Pressing Matters debut here. Wow. So tell me a little bit about this segment before we get to listen to these people. Tell me a bit about the segment and where the birth child was, who invented it.
Ask Loz. I don't know anything about it. I didn't even know I did a segment. I didn't know I was a part of it.
Well, in the off-season, we put our great minds together.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, we did.
Who are we talking
about? All three, mind. Four of us, five of us, the team.
And we decided, I was obviously focused in that meeting.
We decided to come up with Pressing Matters, where we really dig deep into certain topics and challenge each other to be better.
So how long has this been going?
Sorry?
How long has it been going?
I've been a part of it 1 week. I think I've been 1 week.
By the sounds of that intro, I must have been a part of it that
week.
Yeah, while
you were away. You were away. We tried to Zoom you in Pakistan.
And what did I do? Reject call?
Yeah. There was some music playing in the background, so I don't know whether you're in a Pakistan nightclub. What are the nightclubs like over there?
I don't know.
Yeah. Only one thing worse than a pocket dial, and that's a pocket answer.
Yeah.
You never want to do that.
Yeah. You've got to be careful of your bum dial, too.
Just check your most recent call. Just want to make sure before you go out, your last call is a safe one.
Now, tell me this in all honesty.
What?
And when you're having a conversation, it could be about anything, but it might be about a certain person, and you've realised you've rung them recently, and all of a sudden, halfway through that conversation, you pick up your phone and just give it a bit
of a check
to make sure that you haven't butt dialed.
No.
I've done that a number of times.
That's why you got to check your last... The only
You're
call
laughing,
matters-
so I know you've done it too.
The only call that matters is your last call.
I think everyone does that.
Because you can't skip calls. So whoever your last call is... That's the only one you can pocket dial. Or it's a new person.
Oh, no, I find I can...
You can pocket dial a new person,
yeah.
But you can't... Like, if you go recent calls...
No, just the last one.
The last
one's
the one you've got to worry
about. I always get
a bit
nervous sometimes.
Contrary to popular opinion, I don't slag too many people off. But if I have hopped off the phone to somebody and they've annoyed me, and I'm then venting, usually to my partner,
I do
double check that phone
call.
See,
well, that's all I'm saying. It could be that scenario.
Has ended.
Everyone does it.
But don't pretend you don't.
It's smart sledging.
But I don't randomly think to myself,
I'm not randomly talking about X.
I better get my phone and see whether it's gone to R on my call list.
If you're talking deep enough about someone, you'll have that thought, let me tell you.
Oh, dear.
you'll go, oh, I better check my phone here.
Anyway, what do you got for us in pressing matters?
Mr. Annesley on the turbo obstruction rule is, I think, where we should start.
Jake gets to the defensive line and stops running. And all coaches know that if you are putting lead runners through, you have to keep them moving. Otherwise, you are at high risk of incurring a penalty. Then the ball looks like it's going to go wide. And if the ball does go wide, this becomes a different decision to make. But the ball gets turned back inside and straight through the hole.
Well explained.
Yeah, agree completely.
Oh, I agree with the ruling because that's how they've operated it, because it's just been black and white. And once you go to the bunker, they're just looking at the rules. They're not looking at subjectivity or anything like that. They're just going, that's the way the rule is written. Yeah. He's run in and stopped in the line. Moretti had no chance to close down the space where Tom was going through, so it needed to be a penalty. My only thought on it is, I think, and again, we can talk about a common sense decision, because I thought Moretti, while he may have been able to shut down some of the space, he would have got an arm to Tom. And getting an arm to Tom wasn't going to stop him.
No.
But is this where we're grossly unfair to referees? They follow the letter
of the
law.
It's not the referee.
The bunker.
The bunker.
But the bunker follows it to the letter of the law. Yeah. And we still criticise them. Yes. So
and
how can they win?
Welcome to life. Well, we will get inconsistencies too along the way, because there'll be a situation where, I'll guarantee you this year, someone is in a similar situation where contact has been made and it'll be a subjective call. Did he stop in the line, or did he interfere with that person? Did the player take a dive? All those type of things. And at some stage, one of these will get through and everyone then will go, we're being inconsistent
and
here.
It's sport. So one team is peed off. The other team is happy. Welcome to life. That's what I'm saying. It's, at the end of the day, it sounds like a lot of ex-great rugby league players think the rule is garbage. And in that instance, it's 99%. It's not affecting the try. But they're also saying, but that's what the rule is. So you can't, unless you change the rule.
I know they've got to have rules in place, because you can't have people running through the line and taking out defenders. We all understand that.
The problem is the purpose of the rule is to stop defenders being obstructed from committing
A tackle.
So if they were never going to commit the tackle, the rule was essentially done.
Yeah, but how can you guarantee that?
What was happening was the lead runner would direct himself at the defender coming across. That's why they implemented the rule. Because teams were starting to use the old tactic of you run through and you just get in his way and stop him.
You can't get
deliberately
him.
Stop him.
Yeah. And then you switch direction and take the gap.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that's why it came in. But now, in the situation on the weekend, he'd clocked off. Jake should have run through.
That was 100% plan B.
It was just he failed to do his job.
Yes.
He needed to continue to move across at a faster speed if he was going to make that tackle.
Yeah.
But he didn't. But with the way that the rule is written, he got an advantage out of that.
Yeah.
And we will see that and continue to see it, because guys do it on an edge.
And you can't blame the player for that either.
No.
That's just that's what coaches and players, that's in every sport. You've got to push the boundaries as much as you can. So every player would use that to their advantage if they were in that situation.
It's
so
like
you can't blame the player.
Lying down to get a penalty.
Exactly
right. If you've been clipped high, at some stage you will probably lie there.
Yeah.
And go, wait here.
3 seconds, comes on the big screen, there's the penalty.
It does create an environment where we're enhancing players' chances of acting. And I don't think
compared to soccer, NRL's a long way. Nowhere near soccer.
I agree, but there are players who stay down after almost every tackle in the hope that it will be reviewed for a high shot. And it's a horrible habit.
But it happens in all sport. You're trying to push the boundaries. You're trying to get an advantage for your team. It's like in AFL when they duck their head, and then they throw their head back, pretending that they've been hit. Well, what do they call that? Staging?
I don't want to. Yeah, they do. I don't want to go on too much of a tangent. But it's funny how rules create new rules create new problems. For example,
yeah,
they
so true, so to avoid
head high.
It's like the bubble under the carpet, isn't it? You know, you pull the rug a little bit of the carpet and get another bubble somewhere.
Yeah, it's exactly right.
Let's have a listen to Bunnies head coach Jason Demetriou to see whether he thinks he's the right man for the job. I have a feeling he's going to say yes.
I think I've been with this group for a long time. I understand the group. I'm confident that we're on the same page and we're working together. And like I said, we just got to turn it around. Got no doubt I'm the man who can do that. But ultimately, that's what I sit here and say. It makes no difference to what people are going to say. Well, the only thing that's going to make difference is get our training right, get our performance right next week, get some results on the board. That's all that's going to change.
One thing I completely agree with there is that it doesn't matter what he or the club says.
True.
Yeah, there's definitely no doubt about that, Ben, because you've got to go with your actions now, South Sydney. And that they can say all the things that they want to say in the press conference, and I'm not talking about Jason here, I'm talking about the players coming out in support of the coach, but you've got to show it on the field. And you show that with your enthusiasm and you show it with your commitment to get a job done. And they haven't done that in the opening 3 weeks. They get a great opportunity on Friday to come up against the Bulldogs side, who were buoyant after last weekend, having a great performance against the Titans, to come out there and show they're united, to show they're behind the coach, to show they're playing for the jumper and to play for each other. Backs against the wall, you've got to see a committed performance and you've got to see it with energy. And it starts with your defence. The hardest thing to do in a game is defend. And you've got to consistently do it and you've got to love it. All the good sides love it. And they get stronger as the game goes on with their defence. And it's difficult to break them down. Whereas South Sydney at the moment, they go through a difficult period and it gets too hard for them. And then they leak points. And then there's no coming back once your ruck gets blown apart. So, yes, we can criticise some of their senior players, and yes, we can attack Luttrell at the back and Cody for not playing as well as what they should. But I'm telling you, if you're getting blown apart in the middle and you're not hitting and sticking effectively in defence, mate, good luck.
Well, the question that he responded to, I'll put to you. Are you 100% confident he's the right man to coach them?
Yeah, I think he is. I think he is, but I think what we see, if he is the right man, we'll see in their performances coming soon. Like, their opening three games have been tough games, all right? They've been against sides that I think will be close to top four sides. But it's the way they perform this weekend and then gradually improve over the next couple of weeks. If he can... I'm not prepared to say they can't play finals. I see too much talent in that football team. Talent is not enough to get you to a final series. You got to be, have hard work, and you've got to be applying yourself all aspects of the game, and you've got to be training hard, and you've got to be united. But you've got to go out there and show it with your actions. So I will see after 6 weeks how they're traveling. If they're only one from six, they're in all sorts of trouble. So they've got a great period coming up. They've got the Dogs, Warriors and Sharks. If they can jag two or possibly three, then they're right back in the conversation of playing finals.
It's not the first time you've seen a team do this as well, lose the first three games. Well, Souths did it the year they won, didn't they? Weren't they one from four?
Yeah, they won from four.
So I know, of course, everyone's going to be hard on Souths. They're a well-supported team. There's high expectation. They had a terrible year last year. They've probably got a better... squad this year than last year. So, they shouldn't be zero from three. But, mate, it's confidence, self-belief and confidence. They get a win this week. It could just turn things around. They get a bit of a roll on. So I just think, And the coach has said it spot on. It doesn't matter what they say. It's not what they say. It's what they do.
And
so,
it doesn't matter how they win this weekend.
Just find a way.
You've got to find a way.
Exactly right.
It doesn't matter if it's ugly. Yep. As long as they walk away off that pitch with 2 points.
100%.
Our last one, courtesy of Fox Footy. Let's have a listen to Lee Montagna and see what he thinks on Peter Wright potentially being suspended for 4 weeks.
I think that is too harsh. For a player that I saw instinctively braced at the very last second when contact was inevitable. For me, the fear is now that if this is going to be 4 weeks, he's going to miss a month of football. let's not be surprised if players start pulling out of contests, because that would be the smarter option and be called soft than it is to miss a month of football and really dampen and hurt a team's chances of trying to win games of football, because he's such an important player to them. It just doesn't sit easy with me when you watch it in slow-mo to say, oh, he had other options and all these sorts of things. We know how fast the game is. They're coming at each other a million miles an hour, and it's instinctive. You don't know in that situation until contact is inevitable what you are going to do.
Well said. I reckon that is 100% spot on, in my opinion.
Agreed. Now, Lee Montagne, Jonathan Brown, who's spoken along similar lines, and it sounds as though Eddie Maguire's sort of taken it on a different tangent altogether. They all think it's inevitable he will be suspended. But they're saying any chat that this was a deliberate act or worthy of going straight through to the tribunal is just ridiculous. 4 weeks is excessive for a guy who had no other option. Now, people are going to say he could have spoiled. He could have protected the player coming back. He protects the player coming back. He's lucky to be picked next week. Mm. He tries to spoil. They both get hurt. He's gone for a mark, realised there's a player cutting in front of him who's taken the mark. Mm. He's turned his body to protect himself. It's unlucky. He happens to be a foot taller than the bloke he hit, so his shoulder hit his head.
That's a massive difference, I reckon, because of the perception, because of how much bigger he is. It's the look of it. Mm. But when you look at it, he had eyes for the footy until the last moment. I don't think anyone's saying he shouldn't be suspended. I just think everyone's saying 4 weeks is way too much.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge that all contact sports face is this duty of care to players on the field. I think it's becoming a big issue now. And it'll only get bigger as we go forward. And I reckon some of the things, and again, I've been guilty of it, because what I think is an accident, other people now say, no, that's not an accident, and we're going to get rid of that.
Yeah.
We're going to get rid of that behaviour. But I'm still a little bit stuck in the past, because that's the way I saw it played. Mm. That's the way we played. But now we're going through this phase of trying to phase it all out. And I reckon for contact sports, we're trying to make the game perfect, which I get, and take away injuries from players if we can avoid it. And also, everyone's wanting their kids to play a safe sport. And if they see actions like that, then mums and dads look at it and go, oh, geez, do I really want my kid being a part
but
of
who
that
committed,
game?
Who committed more danger?
That's where we're heading. Whether we're right or wrong,
their kid to drive a car, then don't look at the news, because there's a car accident every day.
Yep.
Don't swim in the ocean because there's sharks. Don't ride a motorbike because the crash is way worse than a car. Like, mate, don't walk out your front door.
Get all that. But that's one of the big issues that all contact sports are facing. Because
don't dare bowl a bouncer in cricket.
But down the track, if they haven't put the protection in place and the structure around what the penalties will be and shown that duty of care, then all of a sudden, 10 years' time, the game could be liable, and all of a sudden there could be a massive compensation clause.
I get that, but who has the duty of care? Who was committing the more dangerous act out of Peter Wright and Harry Cunningham?
The game has a duty of care to try and look after the players out there on the field. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying this is the biggest challenge for the game going forward with all the concussions.
I get that. So I agree, but why is the culpability with Peter Wright?
Mate, I get all that. I'm just being a devil's advocate here, throwing it back to you guys.
But then Taylor May...
What do you want him to do?
Do you think Taylor May should have got done for the Reece Walsh?
No. I thought that was an accident.
I agree. It's 100% an accident. But because there's an injury and it's a head injury... We're saying, I think that's what's happening at the moment. They're going on the injury. Mm. Like, how do you protect? Like, play touch footy then.
Well, it's a contact sport, so we all agree that at times in a contact sport,
there's going to be accidents.
There's going to be things that we deem to be accidental.
Yes.
But the codes themselves, they have to be showing that they're looking after the people that are playing the game. That they have to. Otherwise they could be in big trouble.
No, I get that, but I feel like there's still a line. Like, if you're going, that's what I'm saying. If you keep taking this to the extreme, then don't drive a car. No. Don't swim in the ocean. Because you can get injured and hurt with everything we do.
When you
choose to play a sport like rugby league, rugby union, AFL, you'd like to, like, you're never going to get every parent that wants their child to do that.
Yep.
Right?
100%.
But you also understand as a parent that it's,
yeah, risk
it's
involved.
Part of the sport. Yeah.
But,
you know?
But I think what we'll find is the game, well, certainly rugby league, as we move further down the track, we will see incidents that we think have been innocuous that will now start to be reported.
I know, I understand.
So,
what you're saying.
So yeah. Yesterday I raised the issue about that Xavier Coates.
Yeah.
So he dives in the air 3 metres from a try line.
We're praising him. It's the greatest try of all time. Yeah.
You wait until someone comes across.
You're 100% right.
And tackles him in the air, and he ends up in an awkward situation, and God forbid it doesn't happen, but injures his shoulder or something like that.
Breaks his arm.
That type of tackle will be outlawed.
Yeah,
it will be banned.
I agree with you.
But just on that,
I agree with you.
You said yesterday that you can't tackle somebody in the air, but in that instance, I think you can.
Yeah, you can. But if the ball bounces and you jump in the air to catch it, you're not allowed to tackle that bloke in the air. If you kick the ball and you're the attacking player, crossfield kick, I go to catch it in the air. You're not allowed to tackle me.
Mm.
So they changed the rule with
the
bounce
different?
Last year when someone got injured, and I think it was in a Warriors game or a Sharks game. I can't remember which one. So they're taking that out of the game. You can't tackle in the air. So I can see a situation with the Xavier Coates try. If something unfortunately happens with a player diving like that and you've come across to try and stop him and he ends up in a dangerous position, ends up with serious injury, they'll outlaw that.
Yeah.
For sure.
So we should just let him score a try. Great to have your company here on the Big Sports Breakfast. Laurie Daly, Michael Clark and Ben Wade taking you through the morning for the Jared Middleton fans. And I'm sure there are thousands of you out there. He'll be back tomorrow and we can't wait to have Middo back on the show. Plenty texting through and we are getting a few calls as well, mostly in regards to the risk assessment, the head knocks, the discussion of where the game is now heading. I'm intrigued by the discussion we were having just before we headed off to the news, Loz, and I don't think I'd really thought about it in enough detail, but they introduce a rule that you're not allowed to tackle a player mid-air off the back of a kick. Cool. So suddenly, fullbacks, rightly or wrongly, elect to jump to catch the ball because then they know that's buying them a little bit of time. You mentioned an incident where a kick came in. The ball spiked, went up in the air. Mm.
And it was Reuben Garrick, by the way, from Manly. So
right.
I think I said someone from the Warriors or the Sharks. But that's right. It was Reuben Garrick against the Warriors.
So it spiked. Yeah. He was in the air, got taken out because the ball had already hit the ground, got injured. So as a result, that rule was changed. And you've brought up the point of, well, players are now jumping mid-air to cross the try line. If they were to introduce a rule where you can't tackle any player mid-air, what then happens in that situation? You're not allowed to touch them until they're grounded, but they jump from
3 metres out to score
out to score a try.
Well, I think you're still allowed.
Yeah,
well,
you're still allowed
to tackle them at the moment.
Yeah, but
one injury, and all of a sudden that rule is out of play.
I agree.
I think it will be.
I agree with you 100%.
And I don't know what you're supposed to do then.
Yeah,
I mean the other point from Michael, which I think is fair, is that we're currently penalising, in all sports, we're penalising on the reaction, not the action.
Yes.
And it should be, we gave an example off here, and I know that this is as simple as it gets, but if I punch Michael Clark, we're playing, let's make it rugby league for the purpose of the argument. I punch him in the face. He stares me down and probably punches me back. I might get a week. Right?
Yeah, you will get a week.
I will get a week. Yeah. If I punch him, he break has an jaw. Aneurysm yeah. and dies or breaks his jaw.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're getting...
Life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, it's true. Clearly the reaction to the action needs to be a factor because you should get longer if the injury is severe. But I don't think it should be the be-all and end-all.
Well, in that situation, I think it is going to be the be-all and end-all because you see that in
life.
Everyday walk of life.
Outside
so if I just punch him and he walks away, everything's all right, but I get charged for assault, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if you clock him and he hits his head and unfortunately,
you're getting done.
Yeah,
you're doing time.
The worst thing happens, you're going to jail, mate.
But if you take the punch out of it, for example, like I think that's the frustration about the Reece Walsh Taylor May incident is that the Brisbane supporters are sitting and saying, "Hang on, mate, our best player call it an accident, call it what you want. Our best player's out,
and
for
I can
4 weeks.
Understand that frustration. Yeah,
this bloke here, who's caused the incident." By running out of the line, he gets nothing. Mm. I don't care if it's an accident or not. That's what the Brisbane supporters, and you can understand that. So I think a big part of this with the AFL one, like I say, I think, like, has there even been a conversation around 2 meter Peter's character? Like, he seems like he's the cleanest AFL player in the competition. Mm. Every single, I don't know AFL, but every single past player that's commentating at the moment has said there's no intent. Mm. It's 100% an accident. He hasn't meant to do it. He had eyes for the footy. He took him off to protect himself right at the end. Like, that's got to come into the conversation as well. If he's a clean skin like that, he's probably the first guy on the phone to make sure the Swans bloke's okay. Like,
and I can assure you, Harry would be the first to say, mate, all good.
Yeah, so I think all of that's got to come into consideration as well.
All right, we do have a couple of calls through by the looks of things, and I'm sure they have an opinion on these matters. Jack, to you first.
Hey, boys, how you going?
Going well, buddy, yourself?
Quite heated this morning, Jack. But
I'm
awake.
I got a couple of points. First one, more for Loz. I know back in the day, Loz playing centre and 5'8". I'm a massive Dragons fan, and obviously Lomax is pretty unhappy.
Yeah.
Do you think there's ever a world where Flano would move Lomax to six? Because he signed his son to play that utility role as hooker, and he's stuck out on the wing getting not great ball, and he's doing a bit of the tough stuff, which is not a bad thing, but he obviously needs to be in good ball areas.
Yeah.
Is there ever a world where you think that he's got the ability to play six?
Good question. No, I don't. Not at this stage. I don't see Zach as a 5'8 option for the Dragons. I think that he's made his decision, showing that he's going to stick with Ben Hunt and Kyle Flanagan. I do think that Zach has got a lot of ability and would be a better centre than a winger, but he's playing okay on the wing. His opening couple of games on the wing were good. But I think they've still got to get him involved in the game a bit more than rather than just the back end as a set carries. I think he's just too good a player.
Yeah.
To be sitting out there on the wing doing the tough stuff. I think he's more than capable of being an outstanding centre. But I just don't know how happy he is there. That's the problem. And I don't know.
That's the problem. As in saying that if he's not happy, he's going to go to another club and he's that potential player that'll brain it in another club and it'll be another Dragons player that everyone goes, oh, look, that's a waste.
And unfortunately, Jack, that's part of what happens at times when players do get a little bit upset and disgruntled about not being in the position they want to play at. But I tell you what he's done. He's knuckled down and worked really hard, but I think he's got a lot more to offer than just back of the field carries. I think he's a talented player. Yes, we haven't seen the best of him, and yes, we've been critical of him at times, but he's a player that I reckon at some stage, when it all clicks for him, he's going to be a representative player. There's no doubt.
I was the other thing I was thinking about is if he's unhappy. I know AJ Brimson's unhappy, and I feel like we need a bit of a 5'8", so it wouldn't be a bad swap deal because he's played there before. But
well, he's sort of the same, isn't he, Brimson? Because every time I see him play, I want him to get more ball, and I know Dez is trying to fit them all in. And they're saying that young Jaden Campbell will be fullback. And, yeah, I think he's an excitement machine. But there's got to be a way to get Brimson back into the game. And I'm nearly thinking it's nearly time for him to play 5'8". Probably not his best position, but I think I've just got to get him in and around the ball a lot more.
Yeah, just the last quick one, boys. I think the rule change with the dropout, I think it's a bit how you're going, a bit unfair. Because if you're an attacking team and you're grabbing an in goal, you're trying to make a repeat set. You make an error, you give away a 7-tackle set. What's the advantage to the attacking team if they roll it in the in goal? And they don't end up getting the ball back, and the other team doesn't get penalised if they drop it short.
I tend to agree, but one thing I think they've thought about, I reckon they're trying to take collisions out of the game, and I think they're trying to give teams a bit more of a reward for trying to contest the football and not such a big penalty. But when you drop the ball 40 metres down the field and someone gets wound up and they're coming back at the speed and intensity that they do, and there's a collision, then you're sort of running the risk of
a head knock
and injury. So I reckon they're trying to take a lot of those issues out of the game. But I'm a bit like you. I still think a penalty should be awarded if you don't get it right, or if they're not going to bring a penalty back in, I think they get the option of middle of the field turnover rather than 10 metres in from a sideline.
Righto. Thank you, Jack. Wayne, over to you. What are your thoughts this morning?
Morning, lads. Getting back to the responsibility of who it is, I think firmly it's the instigator. If somebody chooses to do something and another person reacts to it, there is no reaction if the first person's not the instigator. So in the case of a guy going for a ball, leaping in the air, he knows before he leaves the grounds that there's a chance, he's got a greater chance of breaking a finger, an arm, whatever it may be. The bloke that's trying to stop him, he's just conducting business as usual. I'm so frustrated. I've been saying for years we should de-incentivise a point scored from a bomb. When I look back at the players like Boasted and Fay and Eric Grove Senior and Niscott and all those great wingers, they never left a blade of grass. They scored by running through the attacking or the defensive players to score across the line, and we'll end up getting to a stage where we'll be employing basketballers to sit on the wing that are 7'5", that don't even have to jump. They'll just go for the ball as it comes down, and they'll be so much higher than the other players. There's no incentive. We should de-incentivise that type of play by giving them less points. So whether it's a 3-point try or as opposed to 4, I'm not too sure. But you know, getting back to the injuries, I'll tell you what else we'll see. Players will want more money because their risk for reward will go up. If we're going to start to penalise players out of the game, blokes are going to say, you know what, these fines and being off the paddock, they're impacting my game. This is my natural game. So long as it's inside of the rules, then we play it. And finally, when we were kids, Laurie, you'll remember our coaches told us where to put our head and how to make a proper tackle. The other night with Reece Walsh, the player that was defending should have gone lower on him. He knew that the risk there was greater by doing what he did. Had he gone for below, no dramas. And as far as players bringing the ball back at full speed, if you tackle below the waist, you are less likely to get injured, irrespective of the speed that they're going. But players choose to do this chest tackle, and that's where they're going to get arms or elbows or heads coming into collision.
One thing they're trying to do there, though, Wayne, is they're trying to stop the catch and pass, which all players are good at, or most players are good at. So if they go low around the hip, he can still tip the ball on. So that's why they're coming in with a higher range target, is to try and stop that catch and pass. But I get your point. We might have to change our thinking. Yeah. But I didn't see, in my opinion, Taylor May coming in to deliberately cause a broken cheekbone to Reece Walsh. He came in to deliberately be strong on him and stop the offload, but not...
You've also said a number of times there's more head knocks in today's game because of the movement of the big fellas. Like, they can step now, whereas
past,
days gone by, they didn't step. They ran straight.
So you look at Adam Fanua Blake, for instance.
Yeah.
If you set yourself low on Adam Fanua Blake and you set yourself early and you bend too early, or even, to be perfectly fair, late, because he's got late footwork for a big man and he's got speed.
You get a hip.
You're
going to
get his hip.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You're going to get his hip. And the other thing is, if you go low on him, he's just offloading at will. So there's a lot of things to take into consideration when you're defending, because you always talk about if you're a right arm carry, all right, and you're coming in between me and another guy, my first point of contact is at the ball.
Yeah. Okay. And was that when you played? Was that the same or was that different?
Oh, it was different because there's different rules. Because you got rewarded a bit more for around the legs, and you'd only have two in a tackle. But the game now allows 3, possibly 4 in, and then the peel. But Yeah, it's all change, but I reckon with a lot of like Payne Haas's, Fanua Blakes, those type of guys, they just don't run straight. So if they ran straight, like in the old days, like a Glenn Lazarus, I could set myself knowing that, mate, he's not going to change direction. But these guys now get to meter away and they've got fast footwork. And if you've set yourself in the wrong position and you know, they step back into you, you're just going to get knocked out. Yeah.
For our listeners out there, you haven't had the benefit, I guess, of being able to see Laurie. Loz can't explain these situations without having to stand up and almost reenact them. I had a feeling for a while there that Clarkie's head was about to make contact.
I wasn't getting up. I saw his eyes, mate. I've seen him tackle and I just saw his eyes. I wasn't getting off my seat.
I thought it was...
I'm not that silly.
You're about to have a hit straight through the forehead. Yeah. We did have a text come through, actually, saying that the funniest part throughout the whole course of the morning is that you and I might line up on a footy field.
Now, you know, I'm playing.
They asked what position.
There's only one position I'm playing, number seven. I'm catching it and I'm passing it or I'm kicking it.
I see that's too close to the fold for me.
It's the best place to be.
And I definitely don't want to tackle, so I'm in the second line of defence.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, if we were playing...
used to play in the halfbacks in the second line. Yeah.
If we were playing against each other, two things are certain.
You'd be a hooker.
Yeah, I reckon he's a hooker as well. Yeah.
What about in league? There are two things for sure.
Yeah.
Right, we'd both be off within 5 minutes with a hammy, and neither of us have laid a tackle.
Oh, I couldn't tackle. My back would go straight away. I couldn't bend. So if I bend down to make a tackle, I'd be, God.
This is the Big Sports Brekkie. Loving your company this morning. I saw a text come through from Brad, the Manly diehard. Benny should know me well was the end of the message. He was referencing the Gary Payton luncheon that we had on Sunday for Tabex customers. And you're spot on, Brad. I do remember you very well. How's this, Loz? Brad will enjoy this, I think. So we've got a formal function. Tab did a brilliant job. Gary Payton, the former Supersonics superstar, he and, well, the two of them essentially, the Rain Man, were just unbelievable, right? Sean Kemp, they had this duo that they were probably one of the favourite duos in the NBA. He's a nine-time All-Star. He's a Hall of Famer. He was in the Team USA for a long time. And he was flown out here with Tab and the NBA to promote the sport and promote our relationship with the NBA. And I think all NBA fans know that they can watch every game via the Tab app for free, which is remarkable in itself. But we were there, had a fantastic luncheon. It was at Icebergs at Bondi, formal dining with like suckling pig and stuff for the main. Like we are talking top of the tree. Beautiful champagnes, beautiful wines. Gary Payton's there, his partner's there, friends, NBA executives, and a few select, I think eight, Tabex customers and their plus ones. Now, Brad arrived. What would you wear to Icebergs, Loz? Fine dining.
Oh, fine dining. I don't know, a nice shirt, jacket.
So Brad,
tight jeans.
Brad stayed true to himself, Clarkie.
What did he go for?
Did you wear tight jeans?
He went for the Manly...
No. I wear shorts.
He went for the Manly Seagulls jumper.
Love it.
And...
That's loyalty.
Looked an absolute treat.
Right.
And Gary Payton, he was very respectful, actually. He'd spent all of Saturday at the Stain at the Gary Payton block party, so he knew Manly very well. But it was great to see you there, Brad, and great to have you with Tab. And I thought we had a great time.
Well, you've obviously done a great job there because he said your knowledge and the way that you handled it was very professional. So well done to you, Ben.
Wow, thank you. I don't hear that too often. Adam Pengilly, we might head your direction from the SMH. I don't even know how to respond to that, so I might as well ask you a question. Kieran McAvoy, we all want an update, mate. He's one of the nicest blokes. I was about to say one of the nicest blokes in racing, but he's one of the nicest blokes I've ever met, and I certainly hope his recovery is going well.
Yeah, morning, Ben. Morning, boys. Horrible fall on Tintuki in the birthday card at Rose Hill on Slipper Day. Kieran's been to hospital. He's been discharged from hospital now. He's found he's got a fracture in his vertebrae, or a small fracture of the spine, which means he's going to be in a brace for a little while. The good news is he's going to avoid surgery. He won't need to undergo the knife to fix that, but he's definitely going to be out of saddle for absolute minimum months, probably looking anywhere from up to 6 to 8 weeks. So, not a great time for Kieran to be missing races. You don't miss races at any time of the year, obviously, but given what's around the corner in the next 5 or 6 weeks, it's really unfortunate time. And we just wish Kieran all the best, and let's hope he can be back in the saddle in the not-too-distant future.
I see Zach's coming to Australia, or Zach Purton, that is coming back from Hong Kong to ride in the Doncaster. What horse are you riding, Adam?
Yeah, he's got militarised laws, so it's a very rare venture back to Australia for Zach. He doesn't get released by the Hong Kong Jockey Club to ride in Australia very much these days, but he's picked up the ride for Chris Waller on militarised. He obviously went round in the George Ryder on the weekend, so we know the three-year-olds, I think, are going to have a pretty significant part to play in this Doncaster on Saturday week with Celestial Legend as well, so Zach's trying to win back-to-back Doncasters. He was successful on Mr. Brightside last year. There is one other jockey change for the Doncaster, which certainly piqued my interest. The Japanese horse, Obam Buramai, who was so good winning the Golden Eagle last year. And Josh Parr picked up the ride when Take, the legendary Japanese jockey, was injured just a week before the race. Well, Josh has won a $10 million race and can't get the ride when the horse comes back to Australia. The stables opted to go with Damien Lane, who obviously has a strong association with the stable, given he's been riding in Japan for many, many years now. So Josh has taken that really well, but Damien Lane will be riding Obam Buramai in the Doncaster on Saturday week.
Well, he's a pro, Josh, and he knows that these things happen. But I will say, as on a scale of 1 to 10 roughness, that is as rough as it gets, because his ride on Obam Buramai in that race was just a 15 out of 10. And as soon as I heard that he didn't have the ride, I thought, oh, okay, maybe one of the Japanese star jockeys is coming out. When I heard that it was Damien, who's absolutely brilliant for what it's worth and does have that association, I was almost miffed on his behalf. Did it come down to, was there a weight concern at all?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so, Ben. I think there was more just Damien Lane has had a long history with the stable. He's obviously ridden for them for many, many years. And we know that Damien's been travelling to Japan probably on and off for the best part of 4 or 5 years now. So he was very familiar with them. I think they just felt comfortable going with him for the ride, given their association. But yeah, I'm a bit of a stickler for loyalty. And if Josh Parr wins you a $10 million race, you're probably giving the first rider refusal. But that's not going to happen on Obam Buramai.
Yeah, strange decision. But it happens, and it won't be the first, and it won't be the last. And, well, we were thinking only a week ago that Craig Williams would be off Mr. Brightside, but he's kept the ride there, and there's a rematch between Mr. Brightside and Pride of Jenny coming up.
Yeah, Australian Cup this week, Loz, looking forward to this race. Just out the 2,000 metres, I don't know whether that's going to turn the tables in Mr. Brightside's favour, but it should be an absolute beauty of a contest, seeing those two horses clash again on the weekend in the Australian Cup. I see Foxy's among the nominations, Loz.
Yeah, I don't think she'll be running, mate.
Don't think she'll be running? Okay, T-Bus is pulling another rein.
Yeah, I think, well, depending on how she is today, but I think we could be heading to Brisbane. I think we might be out for a week or two, a bit of
a rest.
Well,
that carnival's getting stronger and stronger, Loz, up there in Queensland. Yeah. Like, there's some seriously good horses, and I read that I Wish I Wins probably going to have one start in Sydney in the TJ, and then probably have a couple of runs up there in Queensland. So, yeah, they're doing a good job up there, the Brisbane Racing Club. They're attracting some really, you know, significant talent, and I suppose it's probably good for connections to have their horses campaign up in Brisbane and then be able to spell up there in the warmer weather in Queensland over the winter. So, yeah, that kind of just going from strength to strength at the moment.
What about on the footy front, Adam? What do you make of these two injuries to Mitchell Moses and Nathan Cleary?
Well, do we have a halfback curse, Clark?
Yeah, I asked Loz that this morning, actually.
I mean, we had four halfbacks have been dumped in the first 2 weeks or lost their positions. Now, Adam Reynolds missed a game last week. Now we've got Cleary. Yeah. I don't think Cleary's going to be missing too much time, to be honest. I think it's just a very minor injury.
He'll only miss two games because they've got 2 weeks and then they've got the bye. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly, Loz. So. I can't see him playing against, obviously, Manly the week after the Roosters game on Thursday night. But with the bye, they'll give him a chance to get back after that with a good 4 weeks recovery. Mitchell Moses, a massive blow for Parramatta. I'm not quite sure where this came from, because you saw him after the game. He didn't seem like any discomfort. He was walking around the ground with his young daughter, but obviously he felt something when he cooled down after the match and went for the scans yesterday. That's a huge blow for Parramatta. It's going to put the onus on Dylan Brown, isn't it, Loz? He's going to have to step up and really run that.
Who do you reckon they'll pick at halfback?
Yeah, good question. They've got that young fellow Ethan Sanders who's got big wraps on. Obviously they're trying to keep him, but Canberra's been heavily interested in trying to sign him for 2025 and onwards. So that's an interesting one. They've got Dejan Arce, who I think did a good job on and off for them at stages last year in the NRL. So he might be a chance of getting the spot. But I just think the onus all comes down to Dylan Brown now. He's going to have to really step up and be that primary playmaker and try and run that team, which is probably not familiar to him. He's a bit more of an off-the-cuff player, but he's certainly growing and maturing as he gets older. So, I thought Parramatta's had a really bright start to the season, Lois, but this is a huge step back for them.
So did I, but I'll tell you what, it does add a bit of intrigue and intensity, I think, to this game on Monday, because without Mitch Moses, I think the Tigers are on track to cause an upset after their performance last weekend. I know Parramatta were very, very good, but I'm just thinking that the Tigers, it might be... Because I can't remember the last time they would have won an Easter Monday game. Probably last year, was it?
No. 1993.
It was a high-scoring game last year too, I think.
Yeah, Clarkie, you remember this. Didn't they play the opening game of the new CommBank Stadium on Easter Monday between Parramatta and the Tigers? Was that? Am I right?
Yes, they did. They did.
And Parramatta absolutely put a cricket score on them. Like Mitchell Moses just ran right. I remember running to the corner, running almost length of the field to score a try. So it hasn't really been a happy hunting ground, that Easter Monday fixture for the Tigers, has it, Loz? But I'm taking on your opinion.
Mm. All right.
Taking on notice.
Enjoy the day. Good to have you on, and we'll chat again soon.
Thanks, Ben. See you, mate.